Hello, everybody.
This is the Gingerbread Man, and I would like to welcome you to my home. Thank you for being here. I appreciate you showing up. Let's get on into it. So, I sit in my closet. It is slightly hazy in here, so I have a small closet. And I'm looking at my Sunday from the beginning of this mountain, because it seems rather steep from this perspective. I got a lot of shit to do today, including this. And I've been thinking a lot about how we motivate ourselves and get ourselves into a position of accomplishing things. And there's this idea of what it is to be done, you know, the job, the thing, the chore, the errand. You know, there's all these kind of like negative contexts that can be put around it. But the blanket term and the general idea for what it is work. You know, I got work to do. I got to go do some things. And we don't get paid for all of our work, even though we do get paid for some of it. And that could be called our job. And that's a lot easier to rationalize why I want to put out effort, why we want to put out effort when we get paid for it, you know, especially in this sort of society where, you know, money is the value for everything. So if I want to eat, if I want to go get, you know, some fucking toys for my son or some pot to smoke and put in my lungs, I have to spend currency and money. And so everything has gone through this gatekeeper of money. And so that makes it easier to work sometimes, but it's not always easy. And I remember when I was younger and when I had first started working in this vocational market was when I was 18, and I often wish that I had started working earlier. And in a lot of ways I did. I interned with my dad and did a lot of on-site stuff with him, going all the way back to my early childhood. Like when I was real little, I would go with my dad at like butt crack of dawn, 4:30, 5 o'clock in the morning to the job sites. And my dad always did construction. He did concrete. And my father always saw manual labor as something lesser. And so within my educational pursuits, and even at a young age, he could see how bright I shined. And so he was always pushing me away from this sort of labor, this hard physical sort of thing. And he never could quite see how much I respected the kind of work that he did because of how hard it was. And I still think physical labor is one of the most important things. And so from my beginning, I remember witnessing my dad working these lengthy hours and these grueling exercises. And I learned my ethic from that, from watching him. And from helping sometimes back when, you know, it was a lot easier to bring your kid onto a concrete job site. You know, I remember the ebbs and flows of the hydraulics pushing the concrete, because concrete is so viscous that they have to use these huge hydraulic pumps to push the concrete out of the truck and into these tubes. And my dad had what's called a line pump, which are like all these lines, all these long, like 6-inch in diameter tubes that were just made of like thick ass rubber. And, you know, he would pick these things up on his shoulder and take them up to the top of 2-story fucking foundation builds and shit like that. Like, I always was so impressed by him, and he was so unimpressed by himself that he would push me towards this other idea of what work was in this more abstract and intellectual world. You know, he saw me breaking out of working with my hands, and in a lot of ways that didn't happen because I still cook. Anyways, so all throughout high school and elementary school, I had worked with my dad on various different job sites. And when I turned about 15 or 16, my father decided to change his pursuits. And my uncle Polly, was a good friend of my dad's, and he worked in film. And so this was my dad's escape hatch, and decided to go back and do like a quick year-long school thing on film editing, and then using his hands and working hard and showing himself to be the hardworking man that he was able to get himself into a position knowing people to work more in the industry. And that's what he's still doing now, you know. And this all started for me, I'm 28 now, so this was 13 years ago. And so 13 years of changing career goals completely. But when he started going into film, I started helping with internships, and I did a film in, like, it was in a room downstairs. I forget what they called. I'm gonna call it the film room. Probably not. Sounds way too fucking general. But like, imagine this room of just bookshelves full of old stuff, like films, Beta, all kinds of different archaic ways to record things that we're not even using anymore. The most obvious one for most of my generation would be VHS, because VHS got phased the fuck out. But my job was to go through all this old material and watch it and try to identify it and then organize it, you know. And so a lot of times at the beginning of a film reel, there'll be a little spot where it'll show, you know, like 1930 whatever, and then it'll also have like a timestamp. That's the word, timestamp. And so that's what I was usually looking for, was those timestamps. And if it didn't have a timestamp, if it was butchered, then I was listening for what the people were saying, because people would often talk about the era, and so then I could identify it that way, you know. And so that was one of my earlier work examples. But yet again, as an intern, I was only working 2 days a week, and that was hard for me, you know, because I've always been fighting this idea of boredom. And boredom is this really hard to nab down concept. And in a lot of ways, I don't think it exists. In some aspects, I feel it's chosen. And from the perceiver, from the perspective side of the one who's collecting sensory input, it's a decision made to be bored. And so in some ways, I teach it to, I feel it's a teachable moment, and I want to teach people how to get out of boredom, you know, like, because I've worked with myself to learn how to embrace being and out of this abstractness of not wanting to be, because that's kind of what boredom is. And so, like, I remember sitting in those film rooms and just being so goddamn bored. And even though this was an incredible experience to be exposed to history's lore, like one-on-one, like, and have this incredible thing I could say I did. And if I ever wanted to go into film, if I ever wanted to do what my dad did, it would have been great to have this internship stuck on my resume saying I did this when I was 15, 16, right? But I just remember being so fucking bored. And, you know, just at this point, I was, you know, smoking refried, half-smoked cigarettes I'd pick up off the ground because I wasn't old enough to buy them, whenever I would have a pack of cigarettes every 3 weeks. And so, like, all I wanted to do is get out of the building and go fucking smoke cigarettes, you know, just because it was outside. It was this variance. And so I wanted to figure out how to enjoy my work more. And for a long time, I hated it. And so my first job at 18 was working at a Burger King. False. Not false. It wasn't Burger King. It was Steak and Shake. I'm sorry. My memory has a lot of holes like Swiss cheese. So my first job was this fast food convenience that, and my second job was, again, Burger King, fast food. Like, and I remember really enjoying the concept of making money because I had more power and more validity as I saw it in the world. But I still struggled with wanting to be on the job and doing tedious things. And it made my work suffer for several years, because when I didn't have my own stake in the job, it made it very difficult to do good work. What is tedium? Tedious. Redundant. There's a lot of tedious things in the world. a lot of different types. What is something you do every single day? There's a lot of things we have to do for upkeep and housekeeping and life keeping. Sometimes I struggle getting up the motivation to simply brush my teeth. And I know it's silly, but I've been fighting with myself for over a decade to brush my teeth before bed. I find myself in this very fragile, unmotivated state when I'm half asleep. And most nights I'm sitting in front of the TV, smoking and eating and getting munchies and then passing out before bed. And I know it's probably not the most healthy sleep cycle and way to go to bed. I'm working on that. But I'm just so tired. And then I'll have these conversations with myself every single night. Like, it takes 30 seconds to a minute to go brush your teeth, wash all this fucking food out of your mouth, get all the stuff out, you know? And even though I have all these conversations and it's not that hard, you know, just because it seems tedious, I tend to skip it, you know? Novelty is exciting. Novelty is important. Novelty is the spice of life. But novelty and tediousness are opposite poles. They're on the ends of the spectrum of the exact same creature. So I heard this metaphor recently from one of my favorites, Mr. Watts, where he says it's like you're standing at this like fence, right? And you know how a lot of the times kids or dogs will like knock out little sections of the fence or like pieces of a board so you could see in your neighbor's yard, and then like my son would always find other people's kids on the other side, and it was kind of like that old show. What was that? I'm losing myself now. But like, I always had conversations through the fences, through these holes. And so imagine yourself standing and you're looking through, and then a cat comes and walks past that section of break in the fence. First, you're going to see the ears of the cat go by, and then its shoulders, and then the trunk of the cat, and then the tail. But you can't see the whole cat at this point. If you've never ever seen a cat before, it might be a little confusing if all you can do is see the sections and the pieces of the cat, even though it's one creature. Some person might decide to analyze the head of the cat and said the head of the cat separate from the tail of the cat because they're seen in different time periods, and we could even say they're causally related and that the head of the cat caused the tail. But in this situation, is that even really intentionally correct? Can a head cause a tail, or is the head and the tail part of the same thing? Now flip that and let's go backwards and let's consider the spectrums of beings that I like to speak about. When we have opposite poles that exist in reality on up and down, hot and cold, one of those poles, I would say, is tedious and novel, new and exciting, old and boring. Same creature, it's the cat. A lot of the times what we do as humans is we like to put these opposite poles in contrast together, and all of a sudden they're at war, you know. The easiest one to think of within all my storybooks is the war against light and dark. Light always has the upper hand, or should, in our hearts for dark, even though dark sometimes gets the upper hand. But can the tail of a cat get the upper hand on its face? If it's the same thing, is there really a fight happening? Here's the things that I think about quite often. So, novelty, within all of its spice of life and all of its importance, is something that I respect wholeheartedly. And I think novelty makes time elongate and dilate. I think novelty is one of the ways that we can stop time from speeding up by exposing ourselves and looking for this newness. But all the old stuff that piles up like sand against those grass fences, those sand breakers, those sand catchers, that as old shit starts to pile up, things start to feel boring. And as a child, I was very sensitive to this phenomena, really. And I was already getting a crash course in the fear of all of this isness, really. Because I would find something that I'd become very excited about, some novel experience. And then very quickly, I would banalize it and it would become banal. And all of a sudden, something that I thought was new and exciting was boring. And that made me very, very scared. And it made me mishandle my approach to life because I started cherishing the head of the cat and hating the tail. And part of life is being able to cherish tediousness and to be able to enjoy all of the old things that we've collected, all the old talents, all the old sights and old skills. I was hiking yesterday with my son, and I live in Colorado Springs, and in the middle of our town is this very large natural area that's almost completely surrounded by suburbia, like by the city itself, and it's called Palmer Park. And it's not big enough that you're actually outside of the city, but you can lose yourself in it so you can't see the city. And I assume that's a lot like Times Square in New York and other large parks found throughout the world. It's a concept that I very much enjoy because I like being able to get out of the city for a while. Sometimes when I'm driving home, I'll just drive through Palmer Park because it makes me feel like I'm in the mountains for just half a second. That's nice. It's refreshing. I've been driving through that park thousands of times, and it still brings me a sense of peace just to drive through it. One of my favorite trails that's in there is called the Kinnikinick Loop. It's a little, probably mile loop. It takes about 30 or 40 minutes to do, and I've walked it with most of my friends. I like to do it with Odin because he's short-tempered, and he still thinks that nature's boring. It lacks all the shiny lights and patterns that can be programmed into an electronic video game that is very stimulatory and can grasp the attention of our humanoid brains easier than something slow moving such as nature. So I have to be careful and give him short bursts because I'm still trying to teach him how to enjoy the slowness of life. We've walked this Kinnikinick path so many times. And I was thinking and ruminating a lot about that as I walked yesterday. As my heel hit the ground and I rolled to the toe, and I felt every single motion of the wind in the trees. As some leaves fall and some leaves hang on, I saw the clouds meet and I heard thunder in the distance start to wrangle. I was so pleased with existence. And I was so happy to be on a well-trodden path. It really made me think about these things that I've collected in my head, a lot of these ideas, and a lot of sights and activities that I have at my disposal. A lot of the things that bring me immense peace is because I've found an acceptance of both ends of this scale at this point. I'm still looking for the novel. I'm still trying to expose myself to the experience that will bring me to the penultimate pinnacle of wherever I'm going, which I think is where we're all going. I think paths differ. I think you'll find a different way than me, but I think we're going to end up going towards a similar destination. And I want to help. I want to help you feel special. I want to help you make your world special. I want you to be able to embrace all pieces of this existence because there's a spectrum of acceptance and enjoyment that comes from new and old experience. Work is the ultimate example of tediousness. Most jobs are the same thing. Some people are building different projects and they get that novelty as they switch from project to project. But especially in the service industry, which is where I reside because I'm a cook, and through several restaurants, I've learned how to embrace the tediousness of cooking. I had a job 2-3 years ago where we were scratch kitchen, and so we would prep all of our food, all of it, from scratch. And so if I had Brussels sprouts to feed 250 kids, I'm going through 3 cases, almost 70 pounds of Brussels sprouts, cutting off all the tips of those Brussels sprouts. Can you imagine how many of the exact same maneuver with your hand and wrist it is just to cut the same piece of the same vegetable off thousands of times? And we'd have Brussels sprouts a couple times out of the week. That's tedious. But I found myself, instead of shirking from the duty of a repetitive task, I've found it meditative. Meditative. I love cutting things now. And I don't get enough opportunities to, but prepping food and cutting food is one of the most meditative moments of my life now. So let's try that, because everybody's got to cook, right? When next time you're prepping food for your family dinner, and it doesn't have to be 100 pounds of Brussels sprouts, God help you, I hope that's not what you have to do. But when you're prepping, can you try focusing cleanly and clearly on all motions that you do? Feel the blade and the knife and the food and the connections of your mind's eye when you segment, which that's done in the head before you cut. And that's why I can do it almost with my eyes closed now. Embrace that moment and make it, imbue it with your potential, your creative energy. Make this tedious moment a meditation. When you're walking down a well-trodden path, feel every single bit of weight and every press of the ground against you as you move yourself. Every moment of that, imbue it with the specialness of the fact that you are doing it. Every moment is important. Every new one and every old one. So let's all consider what we can do to make all work play and all play work as we jump over the fence and pick up the whole cat and cherish life itself. Thank you so much for sitting here with me today. Before I go find O, I'm going to read a little bit and we'll try to find some words of wisdom from some other people who are finding their own path through tedium. All right, firstly, I'm going to read from this book. It's called Emmanuel's Book. So this is wild. First time I heard about this was in Ram Dass Talks, which you should Google Ram Dass on YouTube, and there's a bajillions of freaking material that you can listen to. He was an amazing speaker. There's also a podcast called Be Here Now. There's all kinds of events and stuff. There's an active community still built around the man. Ram, he met this lady. Her name was Pat Rodegast. And she believed that she was in communion and was channeling the spirit of this old dead dude called Emmanuel. So either A, you know, she's schizophrenic and has this personality in her head, and it's still a piece of Pat. Or B, she's actually channeling a spirit from the other side. Doesn't really matter what is true. If you just look at the material that Emmanuel says through Pat, like, I don't think it matters. Even if it's just Pat, is my point. Like, even if Pat's saying the shit, it's still good material. And I've always been blown away by all the little micro bits that I've heard about. So I went and bought it. And this is from the prologue. And I'm going to do some more of this when I start reading more of it. Just started it. So here you go. Just a taste. Prologue. The gifts I wish to give you are my deepest love, the safety of truth, the wisdom of the universe, and the reality of God. With these four things, nothing will deter you. You will follow your hearts swiftly to your destination, which is home. I know there is confusion and doubt and what appears to be chaos. Can you see that beneath these surface shadows there is eternal light? The earth plane is neither the beginning nor the end of your existence. It is simply a step, a schoolroom. My friends, let me impress upon you how solidly you are planted in eternity, how brilliantly you can shine in your own physical world, how possible it all is, how beautifully the plan is designed. In God's plan, no soul is alone, and no soul is ever lost. So I like that. Most of the message of this spirits, whatever you want to fucking decide, most of the message is incredibly positive and within the wheelhouse and had a huge impact on Rom, which is why I decided that I had to go and read it. Like, I just picked up another book by the Osho guy, and Osho was the man who, with his crazy helper lady, I think her name was Shanya, something like that, but they started a town in Oregon. There's a movie about it on Netflix called Wild Wild Country, you know, and it was obviously a really abusive cult, but I wanted to see what the message of the dude was before he kind of lost himself in the ego trap of cultiness. And so, like, yet again, it's like this supposed negative context that could be skewed, but I'm still interested in it because I want to get my own take on the situation. And what message drew so many thousands of people together to this man that it was still an attractive message? That's confounding to me. So I'll be sharing more of that as I get into that material as well. All right. Last but not least, I want to do a little bit of Chuang Tzu. He's one of my favorites. This is called Kang's Disciple. A disciple complained to Kang. The eyes of all men seem to be alike. I detect no difference in them, yet some men are blind, their eyes do not see. The ears of all men seem to be alike. I detect no difference in them, yet some men are deaf, their eyes do not hear. The minds of all men have the same nature. I detect no difference between them, but the mad cannot make another man's mind their own. Here I am, apparently like the other disciples, but there is a difference. They get your meaning and put it into practice, and I cannot. You tell me, hold your being secure and quiet. Keep your life collected in its own center. Do not allow your thoughts to be disturbed. But however hard I try, Tao is only a word in my ear. It does not ring any bells inside. Kang San replied, I have nothing more to say. Bantams do not hatch goose eggs, though the fowl of Liu can. It is not so much a difference of nature as a difference of capacity. My capacity is too slight to transform you. Why not go south and see Lao Tzu? The disciple got some supplies, traveled 7 days and 7 nights alone, and he came to Lao Tzu. Lao asked, Do you come from Kang? Yes, replied the student. Who are all those people you have brought with you? The disciple whirled around to look, but nobody was there. Panic. Lao said, Don't you understand? The disciple hung his head. Confusion. Then a sigh. Alas, I have forgotten my answer. More confusion. I have also forgotten my question, Lao said. What are you trying to say? The disciple. When I don't know, people treat me like a fool. When I do know, the knowledge gets me in trouble. When I fail to do good, I hurt others. When I do good, I hurt myself. If I avoid my duty, I am remiss. But if I do it, I am ruined. How can I get out of these contradictions? That is what I came to ask you. Lao Tzu replied, a moment ago I looked into your eyes. I saw you were hemmed in by contradiction. Your words confirm this. You are scared to death, like a child who has lost father and mother. You are trying to sound the middle of the ocean with a 6-foot pole. You have gotten lost and are trying to find your way back to your own true self. You find nothing but illegible signposts pointing in all directions. I pity you. The disciple asked for admittance, took a cell, and there meditated, trying to cultivate qualities he thought desirable and to get rid of others which he disliked. 10 days of that. Despair. Miserable, said Lao. All blocked up, tied in knots. Try to get untied. If your obstructions are on the outside, do not attempt to grasp them one by one and thrust them away. Impossible. Learn to ignore them. If they are within yourself, you cannot destroy them piecemeal, but you can refuse to let them take effect. If they are both inside and outside, do not try to hold on to Tao. Just hope that Tao will keep a hold of you. The disciple groaned. When a farmer gets sick and the other farmers come to see him, if he can at least tell them what is the matter, his sickness is not bad. But as for me, in my search for Tao, I am like a sick man who takes medicine that makes him 10 times worse. Just tell me the first elements and I will be satisfied. Lao Tzu replied, can you embrace the one and not lose it? Can you foretell good things and bad without the tortoiseshell or the straws? Can you rest where there is rest? Do you know when to stop? Can you mind your own business without care, without desiring reports of how others are progressing? Can you stand on your own feet? Can you duck? Can you be like an infant that cries all day without getting a sore throat, or clenches his fist all day without getting a sore hand, or gazes all day without eye strain? You want the first elements? The infant has them. Free from care, unaware of self. He acts without reflection. He stays where he is put, does not know why, does not figure things out. He goes along with them as part of the current. These are the first elements. The disciple asked, is this perfection? Lao replied, not at all. It is only the beginning. This melts the ice. This enables you to unlearn so that you can be led by Tao and be a child of Tao. If you persist in trying to attain what is never attained, it is Tao's gift. If you persist in making effort to obtain what effort cannot get, if you persist in reasoning about what cannot be understood, you will be destroyed by the very thing you seek. To know when to stop, to know when you can get no further by your own action, that is the right beginning. Dun dun dun. All right, I know that was a long one. There's a lot of good meat in there. I'm not even quite sure what I want to focus on. So, yeah, that's one of the really dense Taoist parables. There's a lot of things to think about there. All right, appreciate your time. Remember, don't hold on too tight. You already have within you the knowledge needed to find your path, to find your creativity, your interest, your prospect for existence. And you're already in it. You have it. You are it. Thou art it. And I love it. I love you. So thank you for being you. Let's see what Odin has to say.
Hello, it's Asko again. Bet, I've been doing good. If you're asking how did you do, I'm doing good, Bet. Strength's too good, Bet. I bet today's gonna be good.
You still had a good spurt.
Yeah, I did.
You had a nice movie.
Yeah, we did.
No, it was fun in the morning too.
Yeah, we also went to yesterday. We saw the new Miles Morales movie.
Oh yeah, what was your favorite part?
Miles Morales.
Is it?
Yeah.
What do you think of it now?
I think it's actually still pretty cool.
That's dope. I'm glad you liked it.
Yeah.
I love you.
Well, I'm gonna go now.
Okay.
Have a nice day and have a great day.
Thank you. Have a good week, everybody.